Live from the podcast studio, this is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage and relationships.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode 92 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This week is the second instalment of our new series on inappropriate behaviours in relationships, marriage, long distance, whatever your situation is. If you missed the first one, it was 2 weeks ago, episode 90, where we looked at things like OnlyFans subscriptions and whether or not that constitutes cheating and how inappropriate it is. This week we're looking at emotional affairs, and we are joined again by Tony and Elisa from One Extraordinary Marriage.
It was really nice to have them back. So I think we'll let the episode, the interview with them, say the rest. But just a reminder for everyone, the birthday sale is still going on if you are interested in buying the Ultimate Guide to Long Distance Relationship ebook that we wrote. My birthday was a couple weeks ago, and now this weekend is Rich's birthday weekend. So that code birthday is still good at checkout for 34% off. So take advantage of that while you still can, and enjoy the episode. Right, so we're joined again by two very special guests who were lovely enough to come back. We've got Elisa and Tony from One Extraordinary Marriage. Thanks so much for coming back, you guys.
Oh, thank you for having us. We're glad to be back.
Yeah, good to hear you guys.
Always a pleasure to have you.
You're our unofficial coaches in marriage. And we came up with the topic for today. We thought there's only one guest or two guests we can have on for this.
Well, that we really want to.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
So I think we can skip the intro because people probably know who you are. I mean, as Anne said, you're the host of One Extraordinary Marriage. For anyone who is unfortunate enough to have not heard of that show, check it out. It's fantastic.
How many episodes
are you at now? Are you at 600 now? Or
a billion?
615 episodes as of our interview here with you guys. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It's kind of like you're our parents or something, like further down the road, you know, we're catching up.
Well, do you remember last time I said, like, I didn't even know what a podcast was like 5 or 6 years ago. And Rich was like, listen to this podcast. I'm like, well, oh, what's the pod? Okay. And then it was like, oh my God, now I have one and you guys are on it. And what is life?
Yeah, you're our first podcast. So for any of our new listeners, if you're not familiar, then do yourself a favor, check it out. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And as we said, there's 615 episodes to
something
dive into.
Something for everyone.
If you're still in lockdown, you can pass the time now.
That's true.
So this is a continuation of our new mini series on inappropriate behaviors. Episode one, we looked at the inappropriateness or appropriateness, depending on your definition or perspective, of subscriptions to we'll say adult sites. But today we're talking about the emotional side of things with emotional affairs, and we are going to get your opinions on that.
Yes, I think, yeah, as I said, it was a bit of a series, and I think we were speaking briefly before we hit the record button that there's a lot of things now that maybe weren't so common in relationships before. Like, obviously, the we talked about in episode one, the subscription platforms where you can basically be a fan real time to a particular adult content creator. Is that a nice way of saying that? But there are some things kind of that have been around forever that have been a problem in relationships, you know, as long as they go back. And one of those is the emotional affair. So I think probably pretty much everyone listening probably has an idea of what that is, but it's essentially when you have an emotional connection that is maybe not love, but heading in that direction, but you may not be doing the physical things that count as an affair. You're not engaging in any touching, kissing, sex, anything like that.
But I think there's so many things to unpack here. I'm keen to get Tony and Lisa, your opinions on this, because there can often be, and I don't know whether this is something that you think is always present, but I think often with emotional affairs, to me at least, the inappropriateness can be that normally at least one of the people does want more, and maybe they push for more, and they know, look, I know you're married, and so they're kind of sneaky about it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't think it always starts off that way, because I do think the inappropriateness, I think, really starts with what is it that you're sharing with another person that isn't your spouse or the person that maybe you're in a long-term relationship with. Are you sharing those things that really should be reserved for your significant other, and all of a sudden, because of the disconnect in the relationship, because of a fight, because you've told yourself that your needs aren't being met, now all of a sudden there's this person, male or female, who's kind of come in almost in like that knight in shining armor, mm-hmm. to be that shoulder to cry on, to be the person that listens to you, to fulfill all of those emotional needs. And that's where it becomes inappropriate, because you're not taking care of business at home, so to speak. You're getting those needs met from someone else.
So that's interesting. So what do you think about when maybe it's not so much that they're not talking about things at home, but maybe it begins with the person, you know, maybe someone at work, because there's just so much exposure to them, you know, you're with them all day, every day. And maybe things just begin as they're my good friend, or maybe they're my confidant for things, and then they kind of develop, but it doesn't start with you withholding things from your partner or sharing more with them than your partner. But over time, the familiarity with them maybe starts to grow.
I think that's actually the slippery slope that a lot of emotional affairs find. That, I mean, I know personally for myself, gosh, what was that, like 3 years into our marriage? 4 years?
Three years in.
Hmm. I was working for a company that the sales force, you know, there were 100 people on the sales force, 97 of them were men.
Right.
So I was one of those three women on the sales force. And so, you know, lunches were always spent with the guys, dealing with situations always with the guys. And so at first it really did seem harmless. Like these were my peers, and we're going out and, oh, well, you know, this guy's talking about his girlfriend and I'm talking about Tony, cause we were married at the time. And it seemed harmless. The problem was that Tony and I didn't have any boundaries. So I didn't know, we hadn't set up the guardrails in our marriage so that I didn't know where to draw the line, what wasn't okay, what was that violation of the connection. And, you know, if I was complaining about Tony, or if I was, you know, talking about the fact that we were struggling and saying this to a guy, he was like, oh, and he's just sitting there listening. The other guy is just sitting there listening, giving me all of that emotional connection that Tony and I didn't have because we were commuting, working long hours, and hardly saw each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's an important point, is that from what it sounds like you're saying there, it doesn't begin with any particular problems at home. It doesn't begin with falling out, or you don't have to have, you know, fallen out of love with each other or always be arguing. It can begin, you're saying, in more perhaps benign circumstances, mm-hmm. just by not having those boundaries. Maybe you say things that plant the seeds for things to grow.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I was, you know, just in preparation for, you know, talking about this more, you know, I was just looking at different articles and in blogs and things, and kind of a common theme that I was seeing was that it sometimes just does start because of a friendship. And, you know, I don't want to get into the age old, can a man and woman just be friends? But I think that probably does come into play to an extent. And I think there's always a gray area around that. I mean, do you guys think just men and women can be platonic friends if they're not, you know, if they're both in different relationships, is that possible?
Can I just qualify that question? Because I think there's two potential answers to this, or two ways of interpreting that question. Because question one is, can men and women be just friends and not want anything more? And the other one is, we can want more, but can they suppress the urges? Because obviously we know people can be friends and not have sex, but it doesn't mean they don't necessarily want to. So is that a fair qualification for the question?
Sure, yeah.
That's a big question.
It is.
It's one that, you know, as a couple that's been married almost 24 years, I will tell you that, like, I can't think of any male friends that I have that aren't couples friends, right? We're friends with the husband and the wife, and I would consider the husband a friend, but I wouldn't. Like,
you wouldn't necessarily,
I wouldn't call him up and be like, hey, let's go do this. Right. It's always in the context of both husband and wife. And that, for us, that's something that we've been really conscious of.
Well, we had to be, because if I can remember correctly, when we were younger married, that line was very blurred.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we found was that in our marriage, that's a no. Like, I do not have a girl who is a close friend, nor does Elisa have a guy who is a close friend. And that's because we found that in our earlier years of marriage, we would hang out with a lot of people. We'd do a lot of stuff, and a lot of them were, because we were young married. I was 23 when I got married, and Elisa was 22. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our friends, you know, they're in their mid-20s, even late 20s, and some were in their young 20s as well, and a lot of them weren't married.
Yeah.
But we were. And so you're starting to hang out, and you're making these friendships, and we could sense, and we could see that if one of us was getting drawn to the opposite sex, that things were starting to happen in our marriage. Mm-hmm. And that for us was a no-go. And we really had to set up those guardrails around it to be like, hey, you know what? This thing that we call marriage is something that we came into together. We said I do to together. And if we're going to protect that, which we believe in, then we're going to have to make sure that we both agree and understand what it looks like to have others as friends. And one of them, even to this day, is if we get on a text thread and maybe I'm going to text a woman for something or other, I make sure Elisa's added to that at all times. She can be a friend of mine and Elisa's, whatever, but I don't just out of nowhere just go, okay, I'm going to text you and ask you if we can come over for dinner or something. I make sure to say, hey, Elisa's on here as well. So that's something that we did in our marriage for sure.
I think that's really interesting. And I think it shows a lot of self-awareness, especially in your earlier mid-20s, that, you know, maybe not everyone would have the wherewithal to kind of identify that, oh, this is a thing and we need to talk about this and to talk about how this is going to work in our marriage, because I think those conversations are missing in a lot of marriages. You know, a lot of people don't speak up about that. And then maybe they're worried that the other person won't agree.
Or there's a subliminal accusation that, don't you trust me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what is, I think what's interesting for me for this is that, or the question I want to ask based on what you were just saying there, both of you, is would you consider it a red flag in a relationship if someone is having either that communication or considers themselves good friends with a member of the opposite sex? Would you consider that a red flag, or do you think it's not necessarily?
Oh, I think it's a red flag for sure. Mm-hmm. We've seen it happen time and time again here at One Extraordinary Marriage. And the ramifications are big, because I think having the conversation beforehand and having your spouse go, well, don't you trust me? I think those are conversations we can work through. We can discuss, we can share. And yet after it happens, then the trust is truly broken. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of cleanup that needs to begin to happen. And as much as people in marriages think this ideal, like, oh, we can be friends with everybody and this, that, and the other, there's this idealism. And yet you said I do to your spouse. So first and foremost, your intention should always be towards your spouse. And if there's an issue within your marriage where you can't say something, like because we're talking about emotional, you know, affairs, if you're unable to say something to your spouse, then it's probably a time for you to get help, not for you to go to somebody of the opposite sex and have them fill that area for you.
Right.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's something I know for women, you know, a lot of women do talk to their girlfriends, you know, like, oh, I'm really struggling, you know, to talk to my partner about this or that. And so I think it's just, but there is a huge difference about talking to someone of the opposite sex about that. And I think that's really important to talk about. I know, you know, we always try to promote, you know, not bad mouthing your partner to anyone in your mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. But I think if you have good close friends that have a good opinion of both of you, if you have a friend of the same sex, you know, if I think you have to use your judgment, but there are certain things that it's okay to talk about, certain things that you probably shouldn't. But you
this,
can get
this was a boundary we put in quite early on in our relationship, because where we were long distance, we, you know, like in a lot of like what we'll call typical relationships, there's normally quite a lot of exposure to each other's friends and family. But where we were long distance, it meant that me in particular, I didn't have, both of us in fact, we didn't have the exposure, that level of exposure to certain people for the other person. So mm-hmm. if Andrea, when she moved, you know, all of her support network was back home. So sometimes she would talk to people for support who didn't know me. And so one of the boundaries I wanted to implement was, I don't like that there are people who never spoken to me, never met me, who are hearing mm-hmm. the things that you've got grievances yeah. with, because yeah. they don't know the rest of me to know that's not necessarily his entire personality. And mm-hmm. then we're both more comfortable with, you know, now the people who we are very close with, we don't mind that you can go to them for a bit of guidance, because they know how solid the relationship, they know each of us very well. So just to clarify what you were saying, yeah. that was a boundary that I was quite keen to implement.
Yeah, I understood that completely. And, you know, obviously we had a lot going on in our first year of marriage. I had immigrated. We were both running our own home for the first
time. And we were young too. We were 24, 25.
Yeah, there was a lot of friction, a lot of things to work out. I felt very isolated. You know, I wasn't going to go speak to Rich's family, because that seemed very weird to like go to his mom and say like, what the hell's up with your son? No, but I wouldn't have done that. But yeah, just, you know, talking to your girlfriend, like, oh, I don't know. I really want to talk about this. I don't know how to bring it up without it being an issue. Just that kind of stuff. So I think a lot of women probably do that more than men. Whenever I ask you, like, do men talk about this? You just say no. I don't know if that's just you, but I think it's fair to say that in general, women do that more. But why is it that it's so easily, you know, like in a setting, like you were talking about, Elisa, you know, in a work setting where, you know, there's banter and there's fun and there's friends, but then you come in and you're having a bad day. Why is it so easy for that line to start blurring, or that slope to start getting slippery?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a big part of it is the sheer amount of time that we spend in those environments versus the amount of time that we spend with our spouses or significant others, right? When I was working for that company, we were living in Orange County, California, we were living about an hour and a half away, mm-hmm. working in Orange County, living in a different county, and just with traffic in Southern California, just ridiculous. Yep. And so the people that I was working with day in and day out were getting the best part of me. It was when I was awake, I was energized, I was, you know, like I'd come, you know, I wasn't sitting in traffic and on all these kinds of things. And so I think that's where a lot of the challenge falls. If we're not being intentional about the hours outside of work and what that looks like with our spouses, then all of the good stuff, I mean, that's why you get into these phrases, and these are two phrases that absolutely make me crazy or cringe, but it's the work husband and the work wife, mm-hmm. right? There are phrases designed to essentially encourage this emotional affair.
Yeah, totally.
With somebody else. We've normalized it. Mm-hmm. And yet that wife term, the husband term, that was designed to be reserved for one person. If I now have a work husband and I have my husband, where does the line get drawn on who's got what privileges? Where does the line get drawn on what I'm sharing with my work husband versus my, you know, at home husband? Like, we're so in tune to words and what they mean, and yet we assign these labels to people that haven't actually earned them, right? They haven't stood up and said, I do. They haven't, you know, said, I'm going to love you and protect you and care for you for the rest of our lives. It's just somebody we've got this really strong friendship with. And when we get into this place where we're giving the best of ourselves and we're not being intentional about giving good parts of ourselves to our spouses, that's when this water gets really, really muddy and literally all hell can break loose.
Mm-hmm. You said something there I think is really kind of crucial to the conversation, which is that that company got the best of you. They got you when you were most energized at your best. And something I think lockdown has shone a light on is that, you know, so yesterday Andrew went into the office all day for the first time.
We've gone in for a couple meetings here or there, but yeah, I literally went in all day.
So she came in, the first thing I think you said was, I don't know how I did that 5 days a week, and how tired you were. And it made me realize, because I hadn't gone into the office, I was still at home, it made me realize actually there was a noticeable difference in you yesterday evening compared to you previous evenings. And then, like you said, you compound that 5 days a week, every week, say for a couple of weeks holiday every year, there is that change in the person. That becomes the person that you know, like your partner knows, because that's who you are every day. And the best of them, as you said, Lisa, is in the office with work husband, work wife.
I know, I was genuinely going to say exactly that. I mean, you know, I've cut out probably a half hour commute in the morning and a 45 minute to hour commute in the evening, just because the way traffic works.
Yeah.
So I have more time in the morning to be mindful, to spend time with Rich. And then in the evening, I have an hour that I would usually be sitting in traffic, getting more annoyed after having a long, difficult day.
I used to get texts about how bad the roads were in this stupid country, and it wouldn't be like this in America.
It wouldn't, though. It wouldn't. There'd be enough lanes for everyone.
I wish.
Well, I think it's just the lack of preparation here, and just everything's too tiny, but that's another episode. but I think, yeah, I completely felt that. I got home and I thought, like, it's really funny because I've worked in an office set, or not necessarily an office, but getting up early and going into work for, you know, 11 and 15 years, and suddenly not doing that for 6 months and then having to do it for a day completely threw me. And it's so weird how quickly you could adjust to something.
You normalize something that probably shouldn't be normal in the first place.
Yeah.
You adapt to it. And then as soon as you step back from that, as we've done for a prolonged period of time, you realize how abnormal it was in the first
place. Yeah. And I completely realize, you know, when I finish work now without having that commute, I still communicate with my colleagues all day on video calls and messaging, you know, because the type of work I do, it's a very team-based thing. Mm-hmm. But there's something different about being on all day for people, like in that kind of in the office, certain, you know, that office behavior, not in an inappropriate way, but just, you know, the way you act. Yep. And then having to go through all the steps of getting in and getting out. But yeah, I completely noticed that. And I think it has opened my eyes in terms of making the better use when that maybe that's not the case again, and how to make sure that you don't slip into that, because I can see you are, like you said, you're happiest or you're most awake when you're there, and those are the main hours of your day, and the rest are, so basically your partner gets your leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then that leads into that frustration if you're not having intentional time with your spouse. So, I mean, as you guys know, we talk about the coffee break or setting up your intimacy lifestyle, you know, for your sexual intimacy, or making sure you're taking time each month doing a date. If those things start going by the wayside, it's very easy for us to get into a place where in the work environment, we'll just use a work environment for our example, to be around the water cooler or hanging out for lunch, or maybe, you know, you get out for, you know, a break and you're going for a walk, and then, oh, by the way, so-and-so wants to start joining you every break for a walk. And it becomes very easy to just start sharing those deep thoughts, those deep emotions that you're having. And what ends up happening is your body, the good stuff, the good chemicals, the good
endorphins
start popping. And you're like, holy crap. Like, your body's just going, this is good. This is interesting. This is fun. And then you go home and you're like, I have no time for you. I'm tired. I just drove. I'm frustrated. And like you said, Andrea, you know, you just give the leftovers.
Yeah.
And that's where that begins, that bond begins. And you can slip into it fairly easy and not even know it's happening.
And do you think that also, you know, there's that cliche of the excitement of something new, and your spouse at home is kind of
just familiar.
Old hat now. I mean, do you think that's a problem with this too?
Absolutely. And, you know, like Tony was describing there, I mean, once those endorphins start firing again, and we did a series a little while ago called The Kissing Game. Mm. And, you know, one of the books that I had read about that was talking about how, you know, within the first few months, all of the neurochemicals that we experience when we're on that kind of, you know, in love feeling, all of the endorphins, they start to diminish, you know, after 3 to 6 months. And so, I mean, you take a couple like us that's been married almost 24 years, we've been together for 26. Like, I don't have the same butterflies when Tony looks at me that I did the first time he kissed me.
You don't?
Right. I don't know. It's a shock. into shock after 26 years.
I'm heard.
You've heard this before, everybody. You've heard this before. This is not our first time thing. But oh, I know.
Tony. He's just trying his best.
He is. I'm just going to go with it. But when all of a sudden, you know, it's been a little while since you've had that flood of chemicals, mm-hmm. that can become very addicting mm-hmm. because your body's like, whoa, what was that? Let's do that again because that feels really good and it doesn't yeah. feel that good at home. And so we start stepping into this place. I would say 9 times out of 10, it doesn't start with the intention of having an emotional affair. It starts with we're at work or I'm at the gym or wherever. I'm just having a conversation. And you know what? That was nice to actually have a conversation with, you know, someone where it felt like they were listening to me or I could be real or I didn't have to feel like I was walking on eggshells or, you know, I'm not dealing with his anger or her moodiness or any of these things. And our brains are like, yeah, that was pretty nice. Let's do that again. Mm-hmm. And then you start doing it again. And then you have that bad day. You have that fight on the way to work, or you have the text message that irritates you or rubs you the wrong way. And all of a sudden you're with that person, you know, your friend. And it's so easy for those good feelings, those new good feelings you want to have more of that to counteract right. the negativity that you're feeling in your marriage. And so it's natural to feel drawn to that instead of, like Tony said earlier, when something's going on in your marriage, that disconnect is actually it's like the red warning sign that says you need to get help. You don't need to go find someone else. You need to get help.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of our listeners are still long distance. And one of the things one of the big challenges for that is jealousy and insecurity mm-hmm. and particularly around, you know, one, you're not present to see who they're with, who they're talking to. And I don't mean that in a possessive way, but, you know, just generally you haven't got that same visibility that you do when you say live together or they're very close by. And also certainly we're aware of a lot of our listeners who do have friends of the opposite sex, or the same sex, depending on sexual orientation, but you know what I mean. What would your advice be in that situation? Do you think that should be something that the partner should say, look, I'm not comfortable with this, put boundaries in? How is it a conversation where it's not perceived as an accusation of lack of trust and things like that? I mean, how would you say couples could start this conversation to say, it's not that I don't trust you now, but I think if we put the right safeguards in place, we can prevent anything happening in the future.
So Elisa and I were long distance when we first met for a good year.
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is back in the day when all we had was, you know, a phone attached to a wall.
Right.
Wow.
Like today, when we talk about long distance and people are like, oh my gosh, it's so hard. I'm thinking like, what do you know about? You can text your spouse. You can be anywhere and FaceTime them. Right. Like you don't pay for long distance calls like we did back in the day. Like my bills were like $600 a month just to talk to Elisa. And so I think today more than ever, even as a long distance couple, you have multiple touch points and ways to stay connected. Mm-hmm. And to utilize those and not, you know, see them as, you know, just another way to do it. I think we get very complacent at where we are. And in today's day and age, we are so blessed with the technology we have to stay connected to our loved one in this time. So when we're looking at the conversations that we need to have around this, we need to be blunt. And I think we become a little like, should I bring this up? Should I not? Da, 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 da. Look it, you're married. You guys said I do together. You need to have a vision for your marriage. You need to have core values for your marriage. You need to set these things up so that way you guys have some guardrails. And yeah, you know what? Maybe one of you may get a little upset because your spouse is bringing up you talking to somebody of the opposite sex and it's causing issues. Guess what? They have every right to be, because they love you. You said I do to them. And I'm sort of going to get on a little little pedestal here, but I'm going to fight for Elisa. And if she gets upset with me having to fight for our marriage, then I need to communicate and show her and help her understand where I'm coming from. Not belittle her, not berate her, but really sit down and go, if these are our core values and this is our vision for our marriage, then you doing this actually puts a chink in our armor. It's allowing the gate to be opened where it shouldn't be opened. And we have committed to one another. And so we sidestep these conversations and we continue to sidestep these conversations because we're afraid we're going to hurt somebody's feelings. And yet at the end of the day, your feelings, her feelings, they'll probably get hurt a little bit. But we can build from there. We can learn from that. We can grow from that. But I'm going to fight for you.
Well, and I think the sooner you have these conversations in a relationship, and maybe even more particularly because your audience is long distance, to from the get-go, go, what is this going to look like for us? Right? What are those guardrails? I mean, we live in Southern California. Guardrails are a really big deal here because you can be driving along a cliff and there's, you know, a couple hundred feet down to an ocean. The guardrails aren't there to keep you from experiencing the beauty of Southern California. They aren't there to say, you know what, you're going to be limited. They're there so that you don't fall off a cliff and die. That's why we talk about guardrails. Right? They're not these restrictive things. They're a framework for the two of you to say, hey, I know what my boundaries are. I know what we've talked about. I know how I can continue to build the trust in my marriage. Because if I honor what Tony has said, or he has honored what I've said, then you know what? We just have trust that's continuing to grow. I know if I step over the guardrail, I will plummet down the cliff. Mm-hmm. And so it's having these conversations. Are they easy? No. I mean, I remember years ago, there was a situation where literally every radar bell and whistle in my brain went off in regard to a woman that we were friends with. And it was the only time in my marriage that I've told Tony, I'm like, you cannot spend any time with her. Like, you can't, like, as a couple, like, we can't do things. Like, she is... The radar system has gone off. This is like DEFCON 5.
And that initial conversation was sort of odd to me because it sort of caught me off guard because I saw nothing of it. And so talking about like the conversation and what does it look like and the feelings, mine was sort of like, what are you talking about? Like, there's nothing going on here, Elisa. That was my first initial response to her. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, okay. No, my initial response was like, What are you talking about? Like, I don't see anything going on here.
And interestingly enough, this same woman, shortly thereafter, there was another mutual friend and they did get involved in a relationship. And, you know, I know in hindsight that there was a reason all those intuition bells, whatever you want to call it, were going off. But it wasn't an easy conversation. Tony didn't want to hear it. He was very resistant to it. But one of the things that I am eternally grateful for is that he was willing to listen. And because I wasn't crying wolf all the time, because I wasn't saying, you know what, you can't be alone with this person, you can't be alone with that person, da, 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 that he was able to honor and respect that request for the betterment of our marriage.
I love everything you just said, and I love how passionate you got there, Tony, too. But so where do you think the line is? I mean, are you familiar with, I think it's now called the Mike Pence rule. Are you familiar with this?
Is that, I've heard the reference. Is that where like won't do a meal without his wife?
And I think some people have kind of taken it a bit further where they say like, they won't even be in a room alone with a woman. And this was off the back of, I think the Me Too movement and the sexual harassment claims.
Yes.
I think he came out and said, you know, this is my personal rule. I won't put myself in the situation where an accusation is possible. And I know that that seemed to gain either people adopting it or people saying, I'm the same way. Why put yourself in that situation? And I just wonder, do you think, where would you say, like on a scale of having work, wife, work, husband, and then the other end of that scale being that Mike Pence rule, where do you think is the happy place for couples? Should it be that you can talk to people of the opposite sex, but we don't need to get too involved. Or as you said before, Tony, if you're sending a text to a woman, you make sure Lisa's in that conversation. Should people be wary if their partner is seeming to have a friendship, however innocuous, with the opposite sex? I mean, just I think maybe people might have this question listening of, well, I don't really feel that worried. Should I be? Should I implement that boundary now?
Well, we can go from both extremes, like you shared there, Rich. And honestly, there's going to be a happy medium somewhere for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Can we say what that is? No. Because life can throw things our way that are going to skew how we're going to look at this. Previous relationships, what's happened in your current relationship? What's happened in your marriage? Is going to possibly dictate where you're going to be at. I think the bigger thing is that we need to approach it and have these conversations with one another instead of just shoving them under the rug and not having the conversation. And then something happens where you're in a full-on emotional affair where you're looking at your spouse now going, I'm no longer in love with you, but I'm in love with this guy or this gal because they feel me emotionally. And that's where we have to have these conversations, because I think as Elise and I have just gone older and we've just recommitted ourselves to our marriage, we do this constantly because we realize how valuable this time is we have on earth together, that I would skew almost more towards the Mike Pence side of things. Because I want to be with Elisa anyways. So I want to be with her. I want to be around her. I love these moments. Does it mean every waking moment? No. So I think we wouldn't be completely that far over.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say we would lean more that way just because of who we are, what we've gone through, what we've fought for so hard in our marriage to make it extraordinary. And I'm not willing to open that gate up and allow somebody or something come in and drive a wedge between the two of us. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to fight for that.
You know, you said something a minute ago that, you know, that kind of alluded to the fact that there's no one size fits all for what each couple is going to be comfortable with. And even this, you know, what Rich is comfortable with, potentially with me having a male friend, and what I'm comfortable with him maybe having a female friend. Like, I think this is why there's problems with it. This is why, well, part of the reason that these things can happen, because you go into something, you don't see a problem with it. Eventually it becomes a problem. And of course it's a problem to your spouse. But I think, and you also kind of touched on, you know, you have to broach the topic. You have to talk about it. So just, you know, using obviously the two couples in the quote unquote room here, what we're comfortable with might be completely, you know, different than what you guys are comfortable with. You have to talk about it and know what's okay with each other. And that's fine. You know, if one couple is 100% Mike Pence rule, that's fine. If you can walk that line of having a work husband
I was going to say, the reality is, I mean, to sound maybe crude about it, the actual opposite end of that is swingers and open marriages.
Well, yeah, the really extreme end.
But it exists. And to them, there's no problem having that conversation, let alone going even further with it, you know. Yeah. So.
But I think it's just the conversation. And I think the first thing is, you know, for a successful relationship, you have to have trust. Of course, there's going to be times where maybe, you know, long distance can make people feel insecure. Some people are just more insecure than others. Elisa, you mentioned your radar went off and, you know, a lot of partners could have perceived that as you're just being super insecure or you're reading into something. But, you know, thankfully Tony got to the point where he didn't think that or wasn't saying that of you. But you have to have a conversation. And I think, like, for instance, Rich has friends from university that he lived in the same house with, and there was never anything remotely romantic. And if I'm out with my girlfriends in the town and he thinks, oh, I'm gonna meet my old house friend who happened to be a girl for lunch, like, that's absolutely fine with me. I know her well, and there's nothing there. But if Rich said, oh, I've met a new friend at work, we're gonna go get lunch, she's a girl, now that's different to me. You know, for some people, both of those would be completely unacceptable. For some people, both of those would be completely fine. But he knows me, that yes, I know this old friend of yours. I've spent time with her. I know her.
We communicate. We probably over communicate, if that's a thing, you know. So nothing. I don't mean in a bad way, but I just mean like everything's on the table there. So
yeah, good for you guys.
Andrew wouldn't find out 6 months later that I've got a friend at work who's a woman and we have lunch. I mean, I work at home now anyway, but you know,
I'm your girlfriend at lunch.
But you know, so yeah. She would always be. By the way, I'm thinking about having lunch with so and so today. The opportunity for her to object or say, oh, you know, whatever, is there before the moment actually happens. So we always, that's maybe our equivalent of that Mike Pence rule is, if I'm in that room, Andrew knows I'm in that room.
Yeah, or like if we're going to be with a member of the opposite sex at all, it's just a polite, doesn't have to be a conversation. Just, by the way, I mean, I have a lot of friends at work. I work at a very young office. I'm actually one of the older people there. So, and most of them are boys, so they're all my little brothers. None of them are work husbands. They're all work little brothers. So if we go out to lunch, it's a completely different scenario than what some people would have in their office. But Rich knows these guys. He's met them. He's come out to drinks.
You know, and so even in that scenario, like if we're talking about comfort levels, I accept the fact that those are your colleagues who go out for lunch. There have been a couple of times in my marriage where Andrew has gone to stay at a female friend's house for the evening or overnight. Now, the conversation's never come up where she said, I'm going to stay at this guy's house.
Well,
but
no.
I would react to that very differently. Even though the actual scenario is they're all my colleagues, you know, someone in your situation could reasonably say, well, they're all the same. They're all colleagues. We work in the same office. Nothing's going to happen. But just by virtue of what it is, it's a very different dynamic. It's a different proposition to me as the husband to say, I accept that or I don't accept that.
And I'm looking at you like you're crazy, but actually you're not, because – like we talk about when the world was normal and it wasn't in lockdown, we were going to have nights out, you know, with work, and we'd all go out and, you know, have a good time, drink dinner. And then because we all live so scattered around, it was, well, some of you can crash at my place and nothing was meant to be inappropriate, but you can see how it leads to those things.
Yeah.
So it's that conversation of, hey, I'm going to be out really, really late. I'm going to get drunk. I'm not going to do anything wrong, but come get me at 1 o'clock so that I don't have to be put in this position. You know, and that's what you do as a partner. You know, you okay.
Tony, you mentioned something earlier that I think our listeners who haven't listened to you wouldn't be familiar with, and I just want to give an opportunity for you guys to elaborate on it before we run out of time, is the intimacy lifestyle. Because one of the things that's so great about your podcast is, yes, on the surface level, everything you talk about is about strengthening your marriage and being the best spouses you can be, but you go into so much detail and you have challenges and tasks. You know, we said to our listeners earlier this year, we attempted your 30-day sex challenge.
Right.
You know, you do these things. I say attempted it. We didn't complete it, but we tried. And we never did the 7-day. I mean, we went straight in for the month. So I think maybe we bit off more than we can chew. But none of that. Actually, I think it was right around when the pandemic kicked off.
It was when lockdown went in and both of us just didn't know what the world was. And I think
In March.
Yeah, it was March. And
it was March.
Like, I'm sorry, but COVID can affect your libido. Like, yeah. Just the state of the world can,
so,
can affect that.
Not knowing if you're going to be alive the next week kind of put a dampener on
things. Well, it should make you want to do it more, realistically. But
you know, what I was saying is that, you know, you guys really go into that detail. You're not just people who talk about marriage and people kind of like what we do. We just talk about it. But you really have all these resources and talks and books and challenges. So one of the things you talk about all the time is the intimacy lifestyle. And I think it would be great for our listeners to have an introduction to what that is.
And I think this ties in as well before we get into
the opportunity for them to say what it is.
Yeah. So the intimacy lifestyle at its basic is what is your sexual intimacy going to look like from week to week, month to month, year to year, and setting it up. So basically at the core of it, when Elise and I were first starting it, it was just scheduling sex. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to make sure that our sexual intimacy was a priority in our marriage and not allow it to just fade away like it had been? And so that's when we came up with the intimacy lifestyle and allowing us to have that emotional connection, as we've been talking about here, to dive into that, to learn from one another, to have these deeper discussions instead of just work, kids, and laundry, to really start going, all right, what does our sexual intimacy look like? And for Elise and I, you know, through the conversations we began to have, we decided we wanted to have sex twice a week. And then we looked at going, okay, well, every week we want to have sex twice a week. And well, what does that look like now? Because we don't want it to be so scheduled where it's like, oh, Tuesday at 9:05 PM or, you know, Friday at 7 AM. So what we ended up doing is on Sunday, Mondays, and Tuesdays, I have the opportunity to initiate on one of those days. And then Elisa has Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to initiate on one of those days. And that's it at its simplest form. It's just allowing us to have structure around our sexual intimacy that allows us to connect there, but to connect emotionally as well. Because if we're going to have sex every week, we know that our emotional intimacy has to be on par. And when I say emotional intimacy, it's not always conversation. It can be verbal and nonverbal communication. But that has allowed us to hone in on one another and not have to go outside of the marriage and try to be filled by somebody else and end up in an emotional affair. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been one of the biggest things in our marriage that's just allowed us to stay connected. Even when things are going tough and maybe we're not on the same page or something, we find the time to make sure that we're going to be open, honest, and transparent with one another as best as we can in that moment, in that season, with what we're dealing with.
Yeah, no, I think that's hugely important. I think a lot of people, you know, just one last little quick note here, because I know you guys are running out of time, but I think it comes down to, you know, you have to keep each other. And people don't sometimes, you know, sometimes people have a problem with the thought of that, that we've been together forever and, you know, I don't want to have to keep playing these, you know, romance games and stuff or however people see that. But, it shouldn't even, you should want to give your partner love and fulfillment and sex and, you know, meet their needs just because you love them. It shouldn't just be because you want to make sure they don't go have an affair, an emotional affair, but it all kind of comes back to the building blocks of, you know, putting as much into it as you can and both of you giving that effort, and then these things won't be necessary, really.
Absolutely. And I've been thinking about that throughout this entire conversation is, you know, if we would do the things that we did to get our spouses,
yes,
which means that you had those conversations and you spent time with them and you romanced them and you found ways to put a smile on their face and you did things just because, and you know, you sacrificed sometimes what you wanted to do for the sake of, you know, what your spouse wanted to, like, if we would do all of those things after the I do, then we wouldn't necessarily have to worry about an emotional affair because we're putting forth all the effort. The challenge becomes that a lot of times we, and I'm going to lump myself into that, we get lazy about our marriages. It doesn't matter if you're living in the same zip code or you're, you know, tens of thousands of miles apart. If we want this relationship to be long lasting, if we want, like our wedding vows, we said, as long as life shall last. If that's the case, then I have a whole lot of days where I've got to be intentional about making this work. I can't be lazy. Because lazy 100% opens the door for somebody else to take my space.
And just today we recorded episode 616, and it's called A Healthy Marriage Takes Work. And the reason we brought that up is because marriage does take work. We call it intentionality and taking action. That's the way we really look at it. Is, are you going to be intentional and take action in the different forms of intimacy? And are you willing to do that in all seasons of life, in all ups and downs, and really at the end of the day go, you know what? We're not going to allow others to steal our joy. We're not going to allow others to come in and take us off of our game, who we are. And we're going to set up those guardrails to make sure that that doesn't happen. But a healthy marriage, it's going to take some work. And to fend off an emotional affair, it means that you're going to have to get real with one another, even in those times when maybe you're not up for it or your spouse may not be up for it. But together, you know, you guys hold each other's hand and go, you know what? We're on the same team together. We're here to do this together. We said I do together. And I'll do whatever it takes to make sure that we stay together.
Yeah. And if you guys want episode ideas, I was just thinking, just listening to you there, Tony, I'd love to hear your take on the episode we did, episode one for this series on the OnlyFans subscriptions. Because I think once you guys sort of familiarize yourself with what it is and what it's for, I'd be fascinated to hear that episode. So if you're taking requests, that's my friend.
Elisa wrote it down.
That will be an interesting thing.
It's going to blow your mind.
Yeah, I mean, I'll make this really quick, but I think the language got a bit fresh in that episode, just as a fair warning. But I mean, it's a fascinating topic on to my mind, at least, because this is something that just didn't exist in the past. You know, it's an opportunity to invest yourself sexually and emotionally in an avenue that is very new to the time we're living in now. So I'm just so fascinated to hear your opinions on it. I mean, like you said before, you've gone from a relationship that was long distance when your phone was tethered to the wall to now. I mean, you've really seen that full spectrum. So,
yeah,
I'd be very curious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'll have to take a listen.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much. I think it's always insightful.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you guys. Thank you again for joining us.
We love spending the time with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much, you guys.
Stay safe and take care.
You too.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.